food and what should we focus on?
As an exercise professional, as a coach, as somebody who eats food and you want food to give you energy and performance and make you feel good and look good, what's the information that we need to be giving people? What's the right information we need to be giving people? And could it get us into trouble? So it's really nice when somebody says, please help me with my food, or please help me with advice on how to eat or my nutrition, because it makes me feel good as a human being. When somebody asks for our opinion or our advice or our insight or our wisdom, we of course get, it makes us feel special. We get an ego boost. But the challenge is, what if that ego boost could also get us into trouble? And as an exercise professional, and having done this for 40 plus years of my life, it's been really interesting to see, some of the challenges, legal challenges, bang, 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 legal challenges that people get themselves into when they give the wrong advice about food. But I think it's worse than that. It's not nice to get sued if you make a mistake, of course. But imagine making somebody sick, or giving them an allergic reaction, or not getting them the result that they want because we give them the wrong advice about food. Now, we might have thought it was great advice and we believed it and we were passionate about it, but it wasn't right for the person that we were talking to. So as an exercise professional, there's some really important questions that perhaps we should ask before we deliver information about food, or should we be delivering information about food at all? Now, there's a big argument there, of course, because if your client comes to you and says, please, can you help me eat better? I need to understand nutrition better. Please, can you help me with my food? We, of course, want to help. And there is obviously a connection between the fuel that we put into the high performance machine and whether or not the high performance machine goes well. So if we put in crappy fuel into a high performance machine, what will happen? If we put high performance fuel into a machine that doesn't do anything, what will happen? So there's obviously a great connection between food and exercise, between nutrition and top performance for our human body. But what are the rules and regulations? Are there? Are there legal ramifications? There's a big word. And how could we stop getting into trouble and just add value? And for me, that's always been the driving force. And I'll give you the worst case scenario first. As far as exercise goes, because I'm an exercise professional, I'm a person who studies, understands, and learns about, or aims to understand, how the human body works, how to get it fit and strong so it can perform at its best. So that's me. That's what I specialize in. How about you? I don't specialize in food. I'm not a nutritionist. I'm not a dietitian. And then what should I know about the connection between the two? So here's an interesting one. I'll give you the exercise example first. And just be aware, this is not to give you bad news or to be negative. It's just to be aware. So one of the interesting cases that did go to court in Australia was an exercise person. It's difficult to call them a professional because of what happened after I tell you this story. So an exercise person gave a client an exercise, and the exercise was sit-ups on the floor with a medicine ball with a twist. So they had the ball in their hand or on their chest. They would sit up, they would twist, come back down, or come back to the middle and come back down again, and repeat that over and over. Now, what happened is that person ended up with a perforated disc, L4 and 5, and that, of course, is a really serious injury. Now, that, unfortunately, went to court because the person that was given that exercise was a lawyer. And if you know anything about law and legal and litigation and what happens in that situation, the lawyer sued everybody. So the lawyer sued the trainer for giving them the exercise. They sued the manager of the personal training studio for allowing that exercise to be given at the studio. They sued the franchise owner. So it was a chain of personal training studios, and they sued the franchise, the master franchise, the person who developed the business. And then they aimed to sue the education provider for teaching an exercise person to give such an exercise. Now, this, of course, wasn't the Max International Colleges, and I got involved in the situation because there were a lot of people involved in that particular situation because it had a big, there was going to be some big roll-on effects to what would happen in the exercise profession. So I was asked to get involved because, Rowie, what would you do in this situation? If it was your student, how would you handle it? Now, I'm very happy to say and very proud to say that when you understand your anatomy and physiology, you wouldn't give somebody that exercise. When you put a shearing force across a joint and then you twist, say you've got shearing force with rotation, shearing force with rotation, shearing force with rotation, of course you're going to hurt your back. So unfortunately, if I was called as a witness on behalf of the prosecution, I would make a very good witness because that is not a good exercise. Interestingly, you could go back and say, well, the person shouldn't have chosen that particular exercise person. They shouldn't have chosen that personal training studio. They should have done better research before they started. It's their fault. They should take responsibility for their own body. Why did they choose to do that exercise? But I'm sharing that story with you because when people trust you, they believe that you're going to give them the right exercise or the right eating plan. Now, the food story that comes along with that is another situation that went to court, where somebody, an exercise person, literally wrote out a diet for a client, and that diet caused that person to become very ill, and they ended up in hospital. And of course, that became a legal challenge, and the trainer was sued. But the challenge was that the trainer was out of their area of expertise. They were an exercise professional, not a dietitian, not a nutritionist, not somebody who specializes in food. So I'm just sharing both of those stories with you because as an exercise professional, we need to take full responsibility for the exercises that we give people and the advice that we give people. And that's, of course, the reason to have professional indemnity insurance, so that if you believe what you're giving somebody is the correct and right information, you then have insurance to cover you. But can I promise you that even if you think you've got the right information, if you end up in that horrible situation where somebody wants to sue you, the lawyers will go after you and they'll go after everybody involved in that situation. So what do you do? And from an exercise point of view, as I shared, I have to take full responsibility. You have to take full responsibility for the information that you give. So could that be a really good idea or a really good reason and purpose, focus and vision to make sure that you know your anatomy and physiology and you can justify every exercise that you prescribe? And worst case scenario, if you end up in a court of law, that you could justify why you gave the person that exercise. So of course that you need to cover off that you had a really good assessment process at the start, that you made the person aware of some of the risks of that exercise, if there were any risks, that you have good paperwork that they would sign, that they take responsibility for their own body. So there's a lot of things to cover off there as an exercise professional. If you're giving information about food, you really don't have literally any leg to stand on in a court of law because we are not dietitians. We're not people who specialize in food. So the top end of the scale for information about food from a legal perspective is that you would give recommendations and suggestions. That's it. But of course, if you ever end up in a court of law, that would get twisted and turned, and prosecution lawyers are very good at making you look bad even if you're not bad. So it's been a really important mission of mine as an educator and certainly as an exercise professional who wants people to be healthy, fit and strong and to have healthy eating habits in their life, is that I don't want to give recommendations and suggestions about food. What I'm aiming to do is get people to decide for themselves what they want to eat and what's going to be best for them. And it's been a really interesting process because, of course, regardless of what I think about food and regardless of what my convictions are and what I believe is the right way to eat, there are literally thousands of other people that would disagree with that, including top-level medical professionals. And as I always share, there's medical professionals, cardiologists, endocrinologists, dietitians that suggest that you should be a vegan vegetarian, that you should only eat plant food. And there is a large number now of endocrinologists and cardiologists and dietitians that recommend that you should be a carnivore. Now, there's a big difference between plant-based and carnivore, and there's everything in between. So what information should we be giving, and should the better question be, could our client work it out for themselves if we ask the right questions? And from a legal standpoint, but more importantly, from a respect perspective, there's a good one, respect perspective. Do I want to tell people what to do, or do I want to help them come up with their own decisions, make up their own mind about their food so they can stick to it for the rest of their lives? And I always ask that question. If I preach at somebody, tell somebody what to do and how much to eat and how often they should eat, and I tell, preach, is it possible that even if they believe me, if that doesn't fit into their lifestyle, they won't stick to it forever? If I ask the right questions and a person comes up with their right answers, they have to live in their body for the rest of their lives. Every meal they ever eat from now on, they're always going to be there. They have always been there, every meal they've ever eaten. So what do I need to do as an exercise professional to make sure that my clients fueled effectively so they can perform at their very best? And do I want them to come up with that information by themselves? So this is, there's three parts to the process, and I often go through it in single pieces. But from a legal point of view, if you cover yourself off in these three areas and you don't give advice, you don't give opinions, you don't write diets, and if you don't tell people what to do, then from a legal point of view, you'll be safe, but you'll also be very respectful. So there's four things that I always use these four questions. When somebody says to me, how should I eat or how should I exercise? I always ask the four questions about what they're doing at the moment or what they believe to be right. And should it be, and could it be a really good idea to find out what each individual person thinks is the right way to eat or the best nutrition plan for them? Because even if they're not sticking to it at the moment, if you say to somebody, if you were your own high performance eating coach, if you were your own high performance nutrition expert, what advice would you give yourself? And I think you'll be really surprised at that most people have an opinion and they'll tell you and they're quite convicted about that opinion. It seems very rare that someone says, I don't know, I've tried everything, it doesn't work. I think that you should tell me everything I should eat and everything that I should do. And even if somebody says that to you, perhaps dig a little bit deeper and find out if they do have some hidden commitments, hidden convictions, some hidden ideas about food, so that they can come up with their own ideas rather than you telling them what to do. So those four questions I always ask, regardless of what you're doing at the moment, eating and exercise wise, from your eating and exercise plan that you're doing at the moment, can you answer yes or do you answer no to these four questions? So number one is, do you have a stack of energy? Because of course, if you are tired and lethargic and have no energy, how can you live your life effectively? So number one is energy. Number two is performance. So yes, let's have a lot of energy, but are we performing at our best? So you might be energetic to do your sport, or you might be energetic to be a parent, or you might be energetic to go to work, but are you performing at your best? Is your brain work the best it possibly can? And is your body in peak physical condition so you can perform at your best at all the things that you want to do? So whether it's exercise or training or sport or your life, or you're a parent or you're a business person, or you have an active lifestyle, or you just want to go dance at a nightclub for a week in Las Vegas, how do you want to perform? What is peak performance for you? So number one is energy. Number two is performance. Number three, for some people, is the most important thing. For other people, they don't care. But always ask the question, do you look the way you want to look? So the eating and exercise plan that you're on at the moment, when you look in your mirror, do you love what you see, whether you're in your clothes or out of your clothes? And for some people, that is the ultimate reason why they're sitting in front of you, because they want to look a certain way. They want to have a certain body fat percentage, or they want to be a certain size, or they want to be a certain weight, or they want to fit into some clothes, or they want to compete in a bodybuilding competition or a bikini competition. And the way they look is really important. I always add to that, what about feel? So even if you look good, when you touch your body, do you like the way you feel? Do you want it to be hot, softer or harder? Do you want to be tighter, or do you want to be cuddly? So number one is energy. Number two is performance. Number three is, how do you look and feel? And number four is, are you getting the results that you want from your current eating and exercise plan? And here's a great question. Should we be able to demand those four things from our eating and exercise plan? Should I be able to demand a stack of energy, work at peak performance, or do everything in my life at peak performance? Should I love the way I look, and should I be getting the results that I want from this eating and exercise plan? If I'm investing energy, enthusiasm, passion, time, and money into an eating and exercise plan, should it be working for me? Great question. So if the answer is yes, what would we change? And that's one of the beautiful things that I've often shared with people, because sometimes people sit in front of you as an exercise professional and they're there because they think they need to do something different, or they've been seeing things on social media and they think, oh, I should be eating differently, I should be on this particular diet, or I should be exercising a certain way. But when you go through those questions, they go, well, hey, I'm really happy with the way my life is going and I am getting all the results that I want. So let's just continue doing that. Isn't that exciting? If the answer's no, and the person doesn't have a stack of energy, they aren't performing at their best, they don't like the way they look and feel, and they're not getting the results that they want, there is a real excitement, isn't there, to be able to help them. Yes, I know the answer now. I can help you get all of those things. Here's what you should do. Challenge with that, of course, is what if what you think doesn't fit into their lifestyle? What if your opinion is different to their opinion? What if your beliefs about food are completely different to theirs? Is it possible that you might have an argument? And then let's go back to the legal side. If you start giving advice, if you start telling people what to eat, if you are opinionated about food, then you could get yourself into some trouble. You have to work within your lane. I'll use that as a reminder. I'm an exercise professional. I'm not a food professional or a nutritionist or a dietitian. So how can I help my client with their food, because they need fuel to exercise, but without getting out of my lane? So I'm not preaching, teaching, or telling stuff that I shouldn't be doing, because it's not what I do. And again, I'd ask the question, why would I preach, why would I teach, and why would I tell? How about ask some questions? So if a person shares with you what they think is the right way to eat, so if you ask that beautiful question, if you were your own high performance eating coach or nutrition coach or food coach, what advice would you give yourself? Now, what's awesome about that is if you both agree, you can now move on. You just say, well, I think that's brilliant. You're right on track. How about I just hold you accountable to that? Or what help do you need from me to make sure that you stick to exactly what you've shared with me? Because I think that that's a brilliant way for you to be eating. And if you agree with that, or you've shared with me that that's what you what you believe and what you agree with, then we're awesome. Let's go. Let's go train. Let's go exercise. Let's get you fit and strong, because that's what I do. I'm an exercise professional, and you've obviously got your food sorted. The next one is if somebody's got a nutritionist, a dietitian, a naturopath, an osteopath, a chiropractor, a sporting coach, they already have somebody in their life that is helping them with their nutrition, with their food, with their eating. Should you know that? Because if they trust that person and you come in with different information, is it possible that they will just ignore you and or break their relationship with you because they trust this person? So would it be a really good idea to ask that question when it comes to food, nutrition, eating? Do you have other people in your life who've given you advice, shared advice with you, and you really believe what they've shared with you? And again, it goes even further than that. From a respect point of view, from an ethical point of view, and a religious point of view, are there people who eat for religious reasons, for ethical reasons, for personal reasons, things that they eat and they don't eat? So you could get yourself into legal trouble because you give advice, but you could get yourself into personal disrespect, argument, and a person who never wants to have anything to do with you again, because you might disrespect their religion, their core values, their ethics, their morals. And I'm coming at you very personally on this because there are some, and I've made stupid mistakes, so please don't make my mistakes. If you talk about, and I always use this example, if you talk about iron, for example, if you've got a woman in front of you who seems to be lacking in energy, so she says to you, yes, I'm really tired all the time, you might say you need to eat more iron. Now, you don't know that because you have to blood test somebody to find that out. So you could guess, but it might not be true. And on top of that, you might say something ridiculous like, you should eat more red meat. Now, scientifically, the best form of complete protein is meat. The best form of iron is red meat. But what if this person is not only a vegan vegetarian, but what if they're a person who doesn't eat red meat because it's against their religion? They love cows, or they love animals, and they would never eat meat. And now you're either in an argument with this person, or if they're non-confrontational, they'll just think you're an idiot and they'll never want to see you again over a silly statement that I made, which is you should eat red meat. Well, let's find out first if the person eats meat. We don't know that they're lacking in iron. They could be dehydrated. They could be lacking in carbohydrate. They could be lacking in vitamins, minerals, and phytochemicals. All the things that we're not experts in, we can guess. And that's where there's a lot of exercise people, I wouldn't, again, wouldn't call them professionals, who they make a pretty good guess. You're eating takeaway food all the time, so you're probably lacking in vitamins, minerals, and phytochemicals, and you should probably eat more of this and less of this, and we make suggestions and recommendations. But is it possible that those suggestions and recommendations could get us in two kinds of trouble? Personal respect trouble with the person that we're investing time with, or if they get sick or they are allergic or it makes their body break down or be damaged in any way, shape or form, we could end up in a court of law. So how about we don't make any suggestions? How about we don't tell people what to do? What if we ask them what they think they should do? So that's number one. If you were your own high performance eating and exercise coach, what advice would you give yourself? If you agree with them, you're on track, good, great. And you might get them to sign off on that. So what you've shared with me is that you think this is a great way to eat. You've shared this with me on this day, date, and time. And you've asked me to hold you accountable to your eating plan. And I would sign that, they would sign that and date it. Because now I've got cover if I ever end up in a court of law. The next beautiful question, though, when it's... If somebody's committed or they've got an idea about food or a conviction about food, you might not agree. So the first part is, yes, you agree, thumbs up, let's move on, just get something on paper. But what if you completely disagree with what they've just shared and you think that they're going to get sick if they eat like that, or they're not going to get the results they want if they eat like that, or what they're doing is crazy, or there's a whole heap of things that could happen right there. So that's where those four great questions come in. So somebody says to you, I think I should eat this way. And I always joke about, let's say it's the red frog diet. So they've just said to you, I'm on the diet of red frogs and I love it. It's the best diet I've ever been on. And you think that eating lollies is probably not a great way to get into great shape. So you want to disagree with them. But those four questions will cover you off. Because number one, do you have a stack of energy? Number two, are you performing at your best? Number three, do you like the way you look and feel? And number four, are you getting the results that you want from your eating and exercise plan? Now, it is possible that whatever eating plan this person is on, it is working for them because they do have a stack of energy, they are performing at their best, they do like the way they look, and they are getting the results that they want. Because if all I'm eating is red frogs, but I'm only eating, let's say, 1,000 calories a day of red frogs, and my base metabolic rate is 2,000 calories, is it possible that I would be losing weight on the red frog diet? Is it possible that if I'm losing weight and I'm loving the way that my body's starting to look because I'm losing weight, that that automatically will give me energy? My brain chemicals are going, look at you, you look amazing. So I've got dopamine and serotonin in my brain, so I feel good. Is it possible that I'll be performing better? Because if I've lost 5-10 kilos, will I be able to move around better? Will I have more energy? Will I be able to get in and out of my car easier? So I might be performing much better than I was before because I've lost weight. Is it possible that because I've lost weight, I like the way that I look and I like the way that I feel? And is it possible that because I've lost weight, I'll say, yes, I am getting the results that I want from the red frog diet? Now, if I argue with this person that this is a stupid diet and somewhere down the track you're going to get really sick because just eating lollies is going to make you sick, is it possible now that we're going to have an argument, we're going to have a disagreement, and this person may never come and see me again? Remembering that I'm the exercise professional, not the eating professional, not the dietitian, not the nutritionist. So if somebody's coming to see me every week, if I'm in contact with them on a regular basis, I get to ask those questions over and over. If they hate me, if we've had an argument, if our relationship's broken down, I can't make a difference anymore. So if a person says to me they're on the red frog diet, they've got a stack of energy, they're performing at their best, they love the way they look, and they're getting the results that they want, I go, awesome, let's exercise. Next time I see them, how's the red frog diet going for you? Are you getting the results that you want? Do you have a stack of energy? Are you performing at your best? Do you love the way you look and feel? And how long do you think it will be if somebody's only eating lollies that they'll say to you, well, actually, I feel pretty crappy. And no, I don't have any energy. And no, I'm not performing at my best. And actually, I'm not losing weight anymore. Could you please help me? And are we in a position now where we can actually help because the person is open to listening? So those four questions are a really great way to cover off. So number one is, if you were your own high performance eating coach, exercise coach, nutrition coach, food coach, what advice would you give yourself? Whatever they tell you, number one, you can say, congratulations, I agree, let's go, sign off on it. Number two, you disagree, but then you ask those four questions and you keep asking those four questions based on how they're performing on a day-to-day basis. That's pretty easy. If then this person gives you an eating plan that you don't agree with, but it makes sense to them, and you don't, there's some eating plans that you might agree with half of it or some of it or most of it, or there's always controversy, there's a good word, and contradiction and opinions about food, yeah? It's one of those topics that it's been suggested should be politically incorrect, because when you go to a party or a social event or there's food, humans will often be fighting or arguing about food. So the next beautiful tool as a max exercise professional, as a coach, as a teacher, that I've been using for a very long time is what we call the Smarties Principle. And that is the questions, again, questions, not statements, not telling people what to do, but the questions that we can ask people about their current eating plan if they think it's awesome. So, and I'll just add on to that, if you come up together with the way that they're going to eat, you would still ask these questions, because the Smarties Principle makes sure that this person can eat this way for the rest of their life. It's not a 12-week program. It's not a 2-week diet. It's not a eating plan that they start and stop. And I always share with you, one of the really important things for me is that people pick a weight, pick a size, pick an energy level, pick a way they want to feel for the rest of their life and stay that way. Wouldn't it be nice if there was no more diets and no more eating and exercise plans that we start and stop? What do I need to do for my client that they can eat a certain way and exercise a certain way and they never have to think about it ever again? So they're never on a diet. This is just the way they eat every day without having to go through the process of, can I eat this? Can I eat this? How many calories is in this? How much? What's the macronutrient percentage? And it just, food just becomes a controlling factor in their life. What if people could eat when they're hungry, stop eating when they're full, have a stack of energy, perform at their best, look good in the mirror, in and out of their clothes, and get the results that they want without going on a diet, without having to focus on a 12-week program? So the Smarties Principle is designed to make sure that that happens. So Smarties is an acronym for, number one, something I can stick to for the rest of my life. S-S-S-S-S. Something I can stick to for the rest of my life. And if this is, and it's interesting because some people say that they can, and that's why you keep tapping into their headspace, keep asking the questions, keep being on their team, really caring about what's going on with their food. Because if somebody says, yes, I can stick to this for the rest of my life, and then you ask them 3 weeks later, how's it going? They go, well, I haven't eaten that way for the last 2 weeks because it was all too hard. So obviously we don't want to do that again because it didn't work. So something I can stick to for the rest of my life is S-S-S-S-S. Smarties, first one, something I can stick to for the rest of my life. The next one is in moderation. And that's different again for everybody, isn't it? Because vegan vegetarian is obviously not moderation compared to carnivore. But there are people who believe that both of those eating plans are perfect for them. Who are we to disagree? In the middle would be moderation, but a vegan vegetarian is never going to be moderately eating meat, and a carnivore is not going to be moderately eating grains. There's no middle ground. What's moderation for that person, and could we stay away from the extremes? So if I say to somebody, you can't have, and they really want to have, could that then be out of, that could change their mental health state about food? And I always use that example. If I say to you, you can't have chocolate, and chocolate is your favorite food, and what happens now? Is it possible that you'll be thinking about chocolate all the time? And like most of us, where we can't have, can't have, can't have, can't have, how often does this happen to you where you don't have chocolate on magical day or terrific day or wow day or thankful day or fun day, and then on super day Saturday you have the whole block because you went a whole week with can't have? So moderation is, how can I fit this person's favorite food into their healthy eating plan, which is why we always ask, what's your favorite food? What are the foods that you don't like to eat? What are you eating at the moment and why do you eat that way? So that we can work out, number one, if you love it, we're always going to include it in your healthy eating plan. If you don't like it, we're never going to include it in your healthy eating plan. And when you know why people eat and why they eat at a certain time and why they eat in a certain place, then we've got much more understanding of how this whole thing can work effectively for them. So something I can stick to for the rest of my life, is it in moderation for that individual person that's sitting in front of you? The next one is A for achievable. Can this person do this, or are we setting them up to fail? And is it possible that people have been on a lot of diets and a lot of eating plans and been given a lot of advice about food, and they've tried it, and they tried it for a day, or they tried it for a week, or they tried it for a year, and then they went off it because it was all too hard and they felt like they had failed? So if we give people something that they can achieve versus fail, and I always use this example. I had a client who, he was very, he was anti-diet, he was anti-exercise, but his father had died very young. And his only quote or statement to me when he came to see me for the first time was, "I don't want to die early." I saw that happen to my father. So I'm just sharing with you from a food perspective. We looked at what he was eating at the moment, and we made some tiny changes, so just some tweaks. So for example, instead of having a sandwich with butter on it, I said, "If we take the butter off, do you think you'll notice the difference?" And he said, "I don't know, is there butter on my sandwiches?" So that was something we could take off. So it was a small amount of calories, a small amount of saturated fat, and we took that off his sandwich, he didn't notice. I called his mum, who used to make a beautiful roast dinner every Sparkle Day Sunday evening, and I said, "Would you be open to some changes, as long as the roast dinner still is delicious and yummy, would you be open to some changes on how we could make that a little bit more nutrition friendly for your son?" And of course she was open to that because her husband had died early. So we just made some changes to the mashed potato, we made some changes to the way the meat was cooked, we made some changes to what was poured over all the vegetables. He didn't even notice the difference. He didn't even realize that I'd had that conversation with his mother, except that I'd asked, "Is it cool if I call your mum?" And we again made some very small changes. So if we give people things that are achievable, is it possible that they feel good about what's happened because they've achieved, so now they want to keep achieving? And I always give you the end of this story because it's very special. This is a guy that was eating takeaway food every day. He was drinking a large amount of alcohol on Super Days and Sparkle Days. His father had died early. He didn't like to exercise. If you looked at his lifestyle and his eating plan, you'd say there's no hope for this guy. Well, he ended up running half marathon. He ended up running marathon. He ended up being a non-drinker. He ended up being a high-performance athlete. We just made tiny little changes. So the outcome was awesome, but the progress was achievable. Every time he achieved something, he wanted to achieve more. And he was the one that was coming to me and saying, "I don't want to drink alcohol anymore because it's affecting my exercise. I don't want to eat takeaway food anymore because it's affecting my exercise. I want to eat more fresh fruit and vegetables because I want to have more energy so I can exercise." And that's the difference between exercise professional and dietitian. If I get somebody healthy, fit and strong physically, is it possible that they might be thinking more clearly, making better decisions about everything in their life, including their food? So is it achievable? So something I can stick to for the rest of my life, is it in moderation? Is it achievable? Is it realistic? And you might think it's realistic to chop up a whole heap of vegetables and put them in a Tupperware container and eat that every day at the gym. But for some people, apart from the fact that they never want to eat like that, it's just not realistic. That is not going to work for them. So let's find out and ask the question, what would be a realistic thing for you to do based on the changes that you want to make? We often talk about, it's really easy to cook this food, but realistically, the person doesn't even have a stove. There's lots of people now where they live in an apartment and the only cooking utensil they have might be an electric fry pan and a microwave. There are people that you could give them a whole heap of things that they need to do from a cooking point of view because you love to cook or you love the experience of creating great meals, but they're not interested in cooking. The reverse of that, you might tell them chop up little vegetables in this plastic container and that's healthy, and they're thinking, "No way, I'm a foodie. I spend hours cooking meals every night for my family. I'm not eating stuff out of a plastic container." Should we find out? So what is realistic for this person? We often talk about how often they should eat or how much they should eat or what times of the day they should eat. And I'll just use this special example. There's a lot of people now talking about, for example, intermittent fasting. So you shouldn't have breakfast, or if you have breakfast, you shouldn't eat again till the next breakfast. Well, from a realistic point of view, for somebody that loves to eat breakfast, if you tell them not to have breakfast, you could be taking away the thing that's the most beautiful meal of the day for them. If you tell somebody to eat breakfast and don't eat again till the next breakfast, their social meal in the evening could be their life. There are some people that live for going to a restaurant, going to a cafe, having a social experience, and you've just told them they can't do that. Is that realistic for them? Is it achievable for them long term? Is it something that they want to stick to for the rest of their life? if you go back to how can I live my life and not have to diet, not have to think about my exercise program, it just becomes a normal part of my life. That's why the Smarties principle is so important. So is it achievable? Is it realistic? Time efficient is obviously a given. Some people love to spend hours in the kitchen and some people never want to be in the kitchen. Some people spend hours sitting down eating food and other people eat on the run. So is it time efficient, time effective for this particular individual person? And should we ask the question, so that you can achieve your goals, how can we fit your eating plan into your life so that it is time efficient for your life, and work it out together rather than telling people what to do? From my perspective, it's been a really good idea to do that because I've been burnt so many times telling people what to do. And even if you think people like being told what to do, is it possible that they won't stick to what you've told them for the rest of their life? And or if they think you're the guru, what if another guru comes along and tells them something different and that guru's got more degrees than you have or more ripped abdominals than you have? Is it possible they will change? If you sit down together with your client and work this out together, that they can do this for the rest of their life, is it possible that they might want to invest more time and energy and money and passion with you rather than swapping gurus? So something I can stick to for the rest of my life, moderation. Achievable, realistic, time efficient. The next two are, I think, really important, but for some people doesn't matter. Interesting and enjoyable. Some people don't eat food because it's interesting and they don't eat food because it's enjoyable. Did you know that? You might be one of those people where food is all about performance. I don't care what it tastes like and I don't care how much or how little. I just want to look good and I just want to have ripped abdominals. I just want to have big muscles and I don't care. For other people, interesting and enjoyable is the ultimate part of their life. Food is their life. It's the joy of their life. It's the social experience of their life. And we have to make it interesting and enjoyable, otherwise they won't do it. And that's different for everybody, so should we find out? The last part of Smarties, the last S, is really interesting. At Max, we used to talk about science. But again, I'm going to give you the example of vegan, vegetarian, carnivore. Those, both of those extreme ends of the scale, there's a stack of scientists who will argue that you should be this or you should be this. Where does that leave us as exercise professionals who are not dietitians, who are not medical professionals? If we believe this person, we could really offend the carnivores. And if we believe the carnivores, we could really offend the vegan vegetarians and the religious people and the people who love animals. So what do we do? And the science is a really interesting statement now because there's so much contradicting science, particularly about food. So how about this? Common sense. Ask your client what makes sense to you. So I could share with you a whole heap of science, but ultimately, are there people who don't eat the way science tells them to, and they still have a healthy, fit, strong body, full of energy, perform at their best, look amazing, and get the results that they want? And please, the answer is yes. And I'll just use a couple of simple examples. One is protein and one is water. The recommendation for water is 1 litre for every 25 kilograms of body weight and 1 litre for every hour of exercise. That's the technical explanation. If I've got a client in front of me that weighs 100 kilos and I say to them, you now need to drink 4 litres of water every day, and if you're going to go for a walk for an hour, which I wouldn't recommend, but if somebody was recommended that, that's 5 litres of water every day. And if I ask the person, do you like to drink water, and they say, no, I hate water, how's my relationship going? 5 litres of water. Can you imagine that? That's the science. Go back to achievable and realistic. Is it possible that if a person starts to drink a little bit more, starts to get a little bit more hydrated, and I always use the example long clear wheeze, if they start getting excited about having long clear wheeze, is it possible that that might change slowly over time versus you have to drink 5 litres of water, I might break down the relationship immediately. The next interesting one is protein. There's a lot of orthodox information about how much protein you should eat. And there's somewhere between 1 and 2 grams of protein per kilogram of body weight per day. Now, there's probably just as much argument about protein as there is about vegan, vegetarians and carnivores. There's a big argument about how much protein you need. And some people are eating 3, 4, 5, 10 times more protein than that. And they've got great bodies and they're in great shape and they have a stack of energy and they're performing at their best and they're loving the results that they get from their eating and exercise plan. So if somebody says to me, I'll go back a step. If I tell somebody you have to eat 1 gram of protein per kilogram of body weight, and if you're an endurance athlete, you might need 1.5 to 2 grams of protein per kilogram of body weight per day, now we could get into a big argument. Versus, why would I argue? If somebody says to me that they've got a stack of energy, they're performing at their best, they love the way they look, and they're getting the results that they want, as a exercise professional, I'm going to leave that alone. They have a strong conviction about what's working for them. And even if I disagree, imagine if somebody came to you and said, don't eat that, it's bad for you. And unfortunately, there's a lot of people who do that. I've been sitting in a restaurant before where somebody's come to me and said that, don't eat that, it's bad for you. Poor old K-Man was sitting at a coffee shop one day and he was having, of all things, I think in his fruit salad there was some banana. And somebody came up to him and said, don't eat that, it's really bad for your skin and look at your skin. Well, they don't realize that K-Man was brought up in New Guinea and with Irish parents. So very, very pale skin, and he was brought up in a environment that was very, very hot and very, very sunny, and that might be the reason that he's got some challenges with his skin. It might not be the banana, it might be, but what kind of relationship will I have with somebody if I yell at them and say, don't eat bananas, they're bad for you, and I don't even know them? So is it possible that we need to build relationships with people if we want to help them with their food? And I could preach the science, I could believe a certain science, I could have even scientific studies to back up what I've got to say. But are there people that are living outside the science? And it's a really interesting one, because this, the vegan, vegetarian versus carnivore argument has a lot to do with cholesterol and a lot to do with heart disease and a lot to do with anti-aging. And that's one of the things that they argue about. But it's interesting because and I'll just give you the extreme example of this. Have you met people or have you heard of anybody that has smoked all of their life, drunk alcohol all of their life, taken drugs all of their life, eaten crappy food all of their life, and they are 100? How does that happen? There's some rock stars in that position. Now, I get that a lot of rock stars have died early from drug overdoses, but there are some very old rockers who have been living very, very poor, nutritious lives their whole lives, and here they are at 80 and 90 and they're still on stage. So how about common sense for that person? Ask the question, what makes sense for you? And let's work out what's going to work best for you, and then you might get some paperwork to back that up. So if you were your own high performance eating and exercise coach, what would you do? You might totally agree and move on. You might totally disagree, but ask those four questions. Keep asking those four questions so you can keep in touch with that person's headspace about food, so that they know that you give a damn. And somebody just asked me just recently, Roe, what's the difference between a average personal trainer and a top level exercise professional? Is it the knowledge? Is it the professional standards? And I stopped, because I don't like answering questions, as you know, but I'm going to ask you this very personal question. Regardless of how good somebody is at what they do, and let's use this example, you go to a cardiologist and you have to have a heart surgery, and they both have the same qualifications and they both have the same amount of experience and they've both done the same amount of heart surgeries, but one surgeon gives a damn about you. They ask you questions and they're genuinely interested in you and your lifestyle, and the other one doesn't care about you and just books you in for your surgery. Which one do you want to cut open your heart? So my answer to that question is it possible that we want to do business with, we want to be associated with, we want to trust the people that give a damn about us? And is it possible, if you ask all of those questions rather than preaching, teaching and telling, two things: you'll build a better relationship with your client. Wouldn't that be awesome? And if you don't want to end up in a court of law, in trouble, litigated, sued for telling people what to eat, and that has happened, unfortunately. And I think I started that story right at the beginning of today, where there has been too many exercise people now where they've given eating advice, they've made suggestions, they've written people a diet, they've ended up in court and they've been sued. And you can imagine that if somebody gets sick from advice that you give them, or somebody is allergic and they get really sick from advice that you've given them, that your insurance, yes, they may cover it, but they may never cover you again. And please also think that we all need insurance. As professional people, we all need to have insurance. And if there's three or four cases, and of course this has happened, if there's three or four cases where the professional, the exercise professional has lost the case and the insurance has had to pay, then of course now we have higher insurance premiums. So how about we be professional people on two levels, from a legal point of view, from a professional point of view, yes, but what about a respect point of view? What if we ask people what's important to them, what they like to eat, what they don't like to eat? Wouldn't that be great? And I'll just quickly run through those food questions again, just in case that we often go, yeah, I know those questions, but would it be important to know what your client loves to eat, their favorite food, and always included in their eating plan? What your client doesn't like to eat and never included in their eating plan? The reasons why they're eating what they eat at the moment. So what do you eat now and why do you eat that way? And let's find out, because there's all sorts of reasons why people eat. Where do you like to eat? Is it standing up in the kitchen? Is it sitting at a table with your family? Is it at a restaurant? Is it at a barbecue spot on your favorite lake? Where do you love to eat food? What are the days and times do you like to eat food? And I include both of those now because some people eat one day and not the next day. Some people have shared with me, I eat Magical Day, Wow Day, and Fun Day Friday. They're the only days that I eat. So what are the best days and times for you to eat? How do you feel when you eat? Really important question. And a whole heap of mindset questions will come up there. How do you feel if you don't eat? And I just always use that example. There are many people that will answer this way. If I don't eat, I feel powerful. I feel disciplined. I feel respectful of myself. I feel strong. I feel awesome the longer I don't eat. There's a different headspace there than somebody that says, oh, I'm hungry if I don't eat. So how do you feel if you do eat? How do you feel if you don't eat? Are you on track or off track with your current eating plan? If you were your own high-performance eating coach, what advice would you give yourself? And me as your exercise professional, I don't specialize in food, I specialize in exercise. So what help do you want from me? And if you have other people helping you with your food or nutrition, who are they? So that we can talk together and work out the best way to get you the best results possible in the shortest period of time in the safest way possible so that you can stick to this for the rest of your life, which is of course the Smarties principle. So there's a whole heap of special tools there. Four big questions, the Smarties principle, the W questions, and how about we don't tell people what to do? Number one, how about we live the example of energy and vitality? And number two, how about we be really respectful and ask people what's important to them and what they want to do to make sure that they get the best results possible? Do we want to build relationships or break them down? And I'm sure that, like me, you want to build relationships and help people to be healthy, fit, and strong. So let's ask the questions. Great idea.